I was chairman of Rotary Global History Fellowship for 2 years. This is our website, by the way. Visitors are 70,000 Rotarians, and it's free of charge. I invite you to come and visit that. You will learn a lot about Rotary history. Why should we be interested in Rotary history? Well, one thing is that we Rotarians, there are about 1.2 million of us, we can visit a Rotary Club anywhere in the world, and you will find that you'll be treated as a friend, and there's a lot of similarities. Why is that so? Well, there is no manual for how Rotarians are supposed to behave. But it happens anyway. Well, I have wondered about that, and part of what I concluded is that the answer is in our Rotary history. Now, how did it happen? Well, there was a man with a vision, Rotary's founder, Paul Harris. He was a very stubborn man in some ways, but he was a very important man, because that's another question I often get. Why is Paul Harris so important? Well, Rotary is now, we have influential people in 170 countries. We get along with people with diverse faiths and allegiances, and we are an integrating force in the world. I believe that Paul Harris's vision has really created this. Let me make read a few statements by Paul Harris, because he was a prolific writer and he actually wrote continuously through his life. Here is one statement he made. A well-ordered mind is a possession more valuable than unlimited riches. Another statement he made was, it's just as easy to acquire the habit of speaking kindly as it is to acquire the habit of speaking unkindly. We can agree to that, can't we? Then another one he said, perhaps dreaming is not so bad if one dreams good dreams and make them come true. Isn't that what Polio Plus is about? And he also says, Rotary brings out and develops the best value, best there is in men. He said also, the Rotary of today is different from the Rotary of yesterday, and the Rotary of tomorrow must not be the same as the Rotary of today. Rotary will continue to evolve. And that's always a challenge. Rotary has to evolve. What are the challenges today? What I have heard here, and what I knew even before, is that we are losing members in America. We are fewer and fewer members in America every year. Rotary is growing in Asia, especially in India, and also in the former Soviet Union. But we are losing members. And why is that? This is a very big challenge for us. Young professionals in America today, in their busy lifestyle, simply don't have time for Rotary. Why is that? Should it be that way? This is actually a picture I got at the Rotary Club of Chicago. This is Paul Harris sitting, being painted. If you look at the real Paul Harris, it actually looks more stern than the Paul Harris that's being painted. And that portrait is now hanging at the Rotary Club of Chicago. But this is the image we have of Paul Harris, an old man. And maybe that is giving us giving people in general the idea that Rotary consists of old men going to lunch. Paul Harris in Rotary is revered, he's put on a pedestal, and he's unreachable. The truth is actually different. This is Paul Harris as a 17-year-old teenager. And I will get to that later in the speech. This is Paul Harris at the age of 28. Yeah. This is Paul Harris when Rotary was founded. These are the first four Rotarians. At that time, Paul Harris was 37 years old. Paul Harris is the man very far to the right. So Paul Harris was only 37 years old when Rotary was founded. And the truth is that when the International Rotary Organization of Rotary Clubs existed and Paul Harris was its president, he was only 43, 44 years old. Can you imagine the president of Rotary International being 44 years old? I believe that Rotary would be more attractive to young people if we presented Paul Harris for what he was, a symbol of youth. His most important contributions to Rotary was before the age of 44, when he then finished his term as president of the International Association of Rotary Clubs, who later was renamed Rotary International. And after that, he had no former position with Rotary except being the founder of Rotary, which he was for many, many years. Now, in order to find out more about Paul Harris as a young man, I went to Wallingford, Vermont, where he grew up. And this is the house where he grew up. It was owned by his grandfather, Howard Harris. And you can see at the roof, it says HH. That means Howard Harris, the initials. This house is owned by a Rotarian at the Rotary Club of Wallingford. His name is Jim Marquis. And that's Jim that you see there. And that window that he's pointing at, he told me when I came up there that when Paul Harris was a boy, he used to sneak out through that window after bedtime to play with his friends. Paul Harris doesn't really deny that, because in his book, My Road to Rotary, he used to write that I was a rapscallion. And of course, I came from Sweden about 26 years ago, so I looked it up in the dictionary, and it says, mischievous and annoying child. So he pretty much agreed that that's what he was. Then I found out that he had been expelled from a high school also. He was expelled from the Black River Academy in Vermont. And then he, in addition to that, he was expelled from a university. The University of Vermont for forming an underground society. How many of you really knew these things about Paul Harris? Anyway, maybe this thing about underground society was inspired by his grandfather, Howard Harris, who actually played a role in the Underground Railroad and helped many slaves into freedom in Canada. Now, it turns out that he was not guilty of what he was accused of at the University of Vermont, and they made up for it, and later in life they gave him an honorary doctor's degree for that. Somehow he managed to get into Princeton with the help of a tutor. But while he was in Princeton studying, his grandfather passed away, and for economic reasons they decided that he should terminate those studies. But despite of that, even today, he is still regarded as the most successful student of class 1890, even though he did not graduate from Princeton. Why is that? The reason is the Rotary, of course. He was the founder of Rotary, and that made him the most successful student of that class. Now, he finally entered into the University of Iowa in 1890, and there he studied law, and he actually took a law degree there. So, because Paul Harris was a lawyer by trade. Now, while he was there, an alumni from this university came and said, when you graduate and before you make a fool of yourself, go to a small town and make a fool of yourself for 5 years before you go to a big town and start there. Well, Paul Harris thought about that, and he decided that that was a good idea, but he decided to do it differently. He didn't want to open a law firm in a small town. So he took all kinds of odd jobs for 5 years. First, he started out in San Francisco at the San Francisco Chronicle as a newspaper reporter in 1891. After that, he was in California taking a job as a manual laborer on a fruit ranch and then a raisin packing plant. Then in L.A., he became a teacher at the Business College in 1892. And then after that, he moved to Denver, Colorado, same year, and became an actor. And he, after that, he was a reporter for the Rocky Mountain News. Then, believe it or not, Paul Harris took a job as a cowboy. Can you imagine Paul Harris with a cowboy hat on a horse? Well, it's not so strange because they didn't have any automobiles in those days, so I guess you had to be able to ride a horse to get around. After that, he moved to Florida and became a reporter for the Republican in Jacksonville. And at the same time, he worked as a night clerk at the St. James Hotel. Then he became a traveling granite marble salesman in 1892 to 93. And after that, he became a reporter on the Washington Star. But now he wanted to travel to England, but he didn't have the money to do it, so he took a job as a cattleman on a ship in 1893. During that trip, he slept at the bottom of the ship with the cattle. He didn't even have a bed. He slept in the hay. And he didn't have good food, and he slept among the other guys that were cattlemen. Maybe that was part of what rose his compassion for people at the bottom of society, because he knew he was there temporarily, but his colleagues or friends were not. So maybe that was part of it. He came back from that trip, and then he did it again, but now he was a sub-foreman for a gang of cattlemen in 1893, so I guess he made that trip a couple of times. And once he came back again, he became a haymaker and a cannery worker. And he worked as an orange picker in Florida in 1893. But he went back to Jacksonville and became a sales manager for selling marble and granite. Now he had a territory. It included the southern states, Cuba, Bahamas, Europe. And he had an expense account. He has come up in society. He was living a middle-class lifestyle. But now the 5 years were up. So he decided to quit. And his employer, George Clark, said, "Why do you want to quit? You're making good money. You really got it made. So why do you want to do that?" And Paul said, "I want to go to Chicago and I want to open up a law firm." "Well," he said, "George, "I'm sure you make more money as a marble sales manager than as a starving attorney in Chicago." And Paul replied, "I'm sure you're right, but I'm not going to Chicago for the purpose of making money. I'm going there for the purpose of living a life." So he had a clear idea of what he wanted to do. He was now 28, which is the picture I showed you before. Now, Paul Harris arrives to Chicago in 1896, and he starts to practice law. He rents an office. He hangs up his sign, "Paul Harris, attorney." And of course, when you hang up your sign and you open a business, people do not necessarily knock down your door and want to come and scream to be your customers. Well, he hung up his sign, nobody showed up. He said it took him 10 years to develop his law practice, and he said, "Those were the toughest years in my life." His first client was his neighbor, Sylvester Scheel. And after 10 years, he became a very successful attorney. Again, he had made it for himself. But there was something missing. He was busy while Monday through Friday and Saturday. But on Sunday, he went to church. But after that, he missed the fellowship. Now, Paul Harris grew up in New England, in Vermont. Wallingford, Vermont is a place I like to visit often. And in fact, on the 30th of April, I'm going to give this speech at the Rotary Club of Vermont. And they still have this kind of sense of fellowship that he had. But he missed that in Chicago, because Chicago in 1905 or 1904 was not a very pleasant place. They had gangsters there, they had prostitution, and there were a lot of young professionals that came in because of the economic development. But they have no families. They were uprooted. They didn't have any roots. So he and Sylvester Scheel met for lunch and dinners over 5 years from time to time, and they discussed this idea of maybe have a fellowship that got together in camaraderie and service to fill this void. This is what was going on. Then one night in 1905, it happened to be 23rd of February, they decided, well, let's do it. So they called up a mutual friend of theirs, Gus Lohr, and Gus called up his tailor, Hiram Shorey. So they had a meeting in Gus's office, and that became the first Rotary meeting. 127 North Dearborn Street, room 711, is considered on the 23rd of February 1905, considered the birth of Rotary. And that building is no longer there, but there's a plaque on the street, and that corner is called Rotary of Chicago Corner or something like that. Now, you're all Rotarians. You're all, I'm sure many of you have been in charge of Rotary clubs. Have you ever had problems of retaining membership in Rotary? Well, I can tell you that it happened from day one. After 3 weeks, 50% of the first four Rotarians had already left Rotary. In Rotary, nothing is new under the sun. It happened from day one. Well, to their credit, you know, many people would be very discouraged when you sort of lose half of your membership after 3 weeks. But for some reason, they seemed to pull themselves up by the bootstraps, and they continued. And actually, in 1 year, they had grown the Rotary Club of Chicago to 100 members. And the way they defined it was young professionals without families, without fellowships, got together, and they had their counterparts. And isn't that how Rotary works even today? Now, you know, there's always, at least in where I'm in Rotary, there's always a debate in Rotary clubs. Some Rotarians are very international-minded, and some Rotarians say, let's just take care of our own backyard, and let's take care of the local problems we have here. We don't need to worry about what's in Nigeria or some other places. Well, that also happened in the Rotary Club of Chicago. Paul Harris was a visionary who wanted to make Rotary international. He wanted to expand it, but there were a lot of members at the Rotary Club of Chicago who simply said, we don't want to do that. We'll take care of Chicago. We don't care about what's happening in other places. And in fact, there was one man who, and I'm going to change the picture here. This man, his name, he looks very stern, doesn't he? His name is Chess Perry, and he was so much against this whole thing about expansion that he managed to become the chairman of the expansion committee for the sole purpose of preventing expansion. Now, Paul Harris thought the situation was pretty desperate, but he was an attorney, so he knew how to argue a case. So he decided to call Chess on a Sunday afternoon when he knew that Chess had some time. And they chatted a little bit, and Chess suddenly asked him, Paul, why is it that you want to expand Rotary? Can you tell me why? Because at least I'd like to hear your opinion. Paul saw the opening, because now he had been asked the question. So he gave it all he got, all the broadsides he had. And Chess listened. He didn't say much, but what little he said sounded encouraging. So he said, Paul, let me think about it, and I'll call you back later in the week. On Wednesday later in the week, he called him back, and he said, Paul, I agree with you. I think we should expand it, and I'm going to help you. And Chess Perry then helped Paul Harris build Rotary. And Paul has said, I may be the architect of Rotary, but Chess Perry is the builder of Rotary. And he became the first general secretary of Rotary International and remained so for 32 years. And this may have been the most important moment in Rotary and how it's built. And now I'm going to play a recording here where Chess Perry is introducing Paul Harris at the Rotary Convention in Boston in 1933. You're actually going to hear both of them speak. When you listen to this, it's a radio broadcast that is addressed to non-Rotarians, where Paul Harris is telling them the benefits of being a Rotarian, and this is in June 1933. Max, can you please start the recording?
28 years ago, the first Rotary Club was started in Chicago by a lawyer who, though born in the Middle West, was brought up in New England. It was his idea to have a group of men of every line of business and profession who should, in the spirit of the Golden Rule, practice friendship and cooperation. From that club has grown the world movement of Rotary. That Chicago lawyer, who still lives in Chicago, is here tonight, and it is now my privilege and honor to present him to you. I introduce to you all Paul P. Harris.
Friends of the air, it is a real privilege to address you. We are gathered together in Boston from almost every civilized country of the world. We come from the British Isles, China, Japan, European and South American countries, Australia, New Zealand, and many others. More than 40 nations are represented, and some of the delegates will have circled the globe on their return to their native country. It is a most inspiring occasion. In the presence of this gathering, my mind very naturally reverts to the first meeting which was held in Chicago 28 years ago. Four of us were in attendance. Mighty oaks from little acorns grow. Perhaps there are two features of Rotary which more than any other challenge the attention of those who are not Rotarians. One is what we call our classification plan, by virtue of which membership in Rotary is limited to one representative of each line of trade or profession. The other is the provision that neither racial, political, nor religious standards shall constitute barriers to membership. Through these two provisions, Rotary is thrown open to representatives of all walks of life, to representatives of all countries and all forms of religion. Would this seem to open the door to all manner of discord? One might think so. In fact, many have said that human ingenuity could hardly have devised a plan of organization more fraught with peril. Herein lies the genius and the Rotary, the glory of Rotary. The formula or procedure is indeed simple. While Rotarians differ in many respects, in two respects, they are in perfect accord. First, they believe that all nations are respectable and desire to be honorable in their dealings with other nations, that it is the privilege of all men to worship God according to the dictates of their own consciences. In other words, Rotary stands for tolerance. Second, they believe that all honorable vocations are entitled to recognition if they are used in the service of society. With these points of agreement firmly established, disagreement is almost unknown. Rotary emphasizes the points of agreement and avoids controversial issues. Rotary thus becomes the common denominator, the sanctuary to which all are welcome. Is there any valid reason why Catholic and Protestant, Jew and Gentile, should not enjoy friendly intercourse? Well, it is done in Rotary. Catholic priests, Jewish rabbis, and Protestant ministers sit side by side in happy fellowship at Rotary Club meetings. If your travels take you to India, there you may see Mohammedans, Hindus, and Christians breaking bread together. Is this not as it should be? Remember the words, peace on earth, goodwill toward all men. To put it briefly, Rotary is trying to make the words of Robert Burns come true. You'll remember then, the time will come for all that when man to man shall brother be for all that. Those outside the membership frequently ask the question, how did it come about? That's a hard question to answer. One answer would be that Rotary's popular appeal is due to the fact that in Rotary, men are encouraged to be natural, just to be themselves. In this world where artificiality so abounds, it is refreshing to meet with groups who are not worshippers of cold, meaningless formalities. There's a bit of the boy in every man, and friendly, natural intercourse is the best way to bring it out. I wish that it might be your privilege, as it is mine tonight, to look in on this happy throng of big, strong men from Occident and Orient, from the frozen north and from down beneath the equator. Many of them have their wives with them. The faces of all are radiant with smiles as they clasp each other's hands. If you are here, I believe that you would agree with me in my conclusion that the words of the Bard of Air were not the expression of an idle dream, that they were indeed prophetic, and that the finest conception of human mind, the conception of universal goodwill and peace, will in God's good time be realized in very truth. Rotary, in the final analysis, is a way of life, a good, natural, wholesome, friendly way of life. The world is full of potential Rotarians who are not Rotarians in fact. Many of them are listening to me now. If you have the love of your fellow men in your heart, my friends, you are potential Rotarians.
Thank you. Thank you. If you have the love to your fellow man in your heart, you're potential Rotarian. Actually, let's think about it. If you don't have compassion for other people, can you really be a Rotarian? Isn't that central in being a Rotarian? Now, Paul Harris gave this speech in 1933 in June. This was about 4 months after Adolf Hitler came to power. This was about 3 months after Franklin D. Roosevelt gave his famous speech during the deepest depression. The worst thing you can fear is fear itself. And Joseph Stalin, of course, was in power. Here was Paul Harris, the eternal optimist, holding up how he didn't say anything about problems. He talked about the great future. In my opinion, a true sign of great leadership is when you can hold up a vision, even in the worst of times, and have that vision become reality because you inspire people to make it a reality. And I think that's part of what was the greatness of Paul Harris. Paul Harris used to say, Rotary allows ordinary people to do extraordinary things. He also said, war is always a ghastly blunder, even the winners lose. At the convention in Chicago, I met a woman in her 70s, a retired professor from Michigan, who told me that she knew Paul Harris as a little girl. Paul Harris used to come up during the summers together with his wife Jean in the summer house there, and they spent the summers together. They used to have dinner with her parents. And he tried to convince her father to become a Rotarian. He was never successful, but she told me that little did he know that he convinced me to become a Rotarian. So in 1990, she became a Rotarian when the Rotary Club would accept her as a woman. Now, thank you. As a 12-year-old girl, she asked Paul in 1942 what he really thought about the World War. And Paul Harris said, it's terrible. I hope it will end soon so we can bring Rotary back to Germany and Japan. And then we must do something to make sure a war like this never happens again. In 1943, this was 1 year later, there may be a connection between this dialogue or not, Rotary sponsored a conference in London with ministers and observers from 21 governments. That group later became UNESCO. So this was the first seeds for the United Nations. Then, of course, in 1945, Rotarians played a very active role in San Francisco when the United Nations was chartered. In fact, 49 Rotarians helped draft the United Nations Charter, and many other delegates from around the world were Rotarians. They weren't there to represent Rotary, but they were Rotarians. Rotary was also one of the original 42 NGOs, which Gillian told you yesterday. At the organization conference in San Francisco, and you can see that San Francisco is playing a very important role here in Rotary history. The United States delegation invited Rotary International to appoint consultants, and there were 12 prominent Rotarians that served in that capacity and influenced the humane aspects of the charter. And the Rotarians in San Francisco helped rewrite the preamble, we the people rather than we the states. So that is another influence that Rotarians in San Francisco has had on the United Nations. The U.S. government had called upon Rotary to become involved in the founding process, and the Secretary of State at the time, Edward Stettinius Jr., wrote, "The invitation to Rotary International to participate in the United Nations conference as consultants to the United States delegation was not merely a gesture of goodwill and respect towards a great organization. It was a simple recognition of the practical part Rotary members has played and will continue to play in the development of understanding among nations. The representatives of Rotary were needed at San Francisco, and as you well know, they made a considerable contribution to the charter itself and particularly to the framing and provisions of the Economic and Social Council." So history has shown that San Francisco has been a very influential city to Rotary. And of course, in 1908, when the second Rotary Club was founded in the world, that was the Rotary Club of San Francisco by Bill. And of course, you probably already know this, by Homer Wood. And he went ahead and also helped found Rotary Clubs in Oakland, Seattle, and Los Angeles. Now, the Rotary Club of New York, which is club number 6, which I'm a member of, was also initiated from San Francisco. Clarence Wetmore initiated that, but Paul Harris had wanted the New York club to be number 2, but New York didn't want Rotary at the time, so San Francisco came ahead. But when he heard that they were going to form a Rotary Club in New York, Paul Harris took over and actually helped initiate it and became an honorary member of our club and a member of our board for the rest of his life. Another thing which you may not know is that there was a San Franciscan Rotarian, William Stuart Morrow, who, when he moved back to Ireland, started Rotary over in Great Britain, in Ireland and in England. So that's another one. Anyway, so I think you could say that, you could argue that San Francisco may be the most important city in the Rotary history as far as the expansion of Rotary goes. Thank you. Now, how do we address the future of Rotary? Where do we go? And I have some thoughts on that. I can't say I have the answers to it, but I want to throw this out because when I gave this speech in 2004, 2005, I was the chairman of Rotary History, and we celebrated Rotary, and we celebrated Rotary History. But for me to give this speech today, I think it's more relevant to use it in the context of how do we move Rotary forward in the future. Here are some of my thoughts. I'm not saying these are all the answers, but we live in a world where brand names are very important. We know McDonald's, we have all of that. But the Rotary brand is also a very important brand. Very, very powerful. When Rotarians around the world meet and they see the Rotary pin, it works as an introduction. Immediately have a recognition. I mean, I live in New York. Let's say I would want to do business in Texas or in Alabama. I come to a small city. And I don't know how positive they are to receive New Yorkers there. But what I would do is I would go and visit the local Rotary Club, Chances are I'd be sitting at the same table as the mayor of the city, the chief of police, the head judge, the bank director, and they will tell me what's going on in the city. I will have excellent introductions, and that meal that probably cost me $10 will be money well invested. I was in Hong Kong for 2 weeks in January. I visited 3 Rotary clubs. I got so many contacts, I haven't had time to even follow up on all of them. And when I'm in Sweden, I visit Rotary clubs. It's the best thing. Whenever you travel, visit a Rotary club, and you'll understand how powerful Rotary really is. Now, why is it good for us to be a Rotarian? And I'm talking about now, how do we convince a non-Rotarian to become a Rotarian? Well, we the people, me, you, everybody, we're all social animals. Whether we're independent or not, we are affected by our peer groups. We're simply influenced by that. As a Rotarian, we have a very powerful peer group in our club and anywhere else in the world, because we are people that live by the four-way test. Is it the truth? Is it fair to all concerned? Will it build goodwill and better friendships? Will it be beneficial to all concerns? We live by a moral code. So being a Rotarian makes us better people simply by the company that we keep. So you take a young person, a young professional, who I'm sure would need peers, good peers. Rotary is a great solution. And today people sit at their computers on the internet. They have no idea who's at the other side of the line. They need this. And Rotary is an excellent organization to fulfill that need. In fact, we have many friends. We have more than 1 million friends in 170 countries. And together we can do a lot of things. For example, we raised $600 million for Polio Plus. What you may not have known is also that we, the Rotarians, lobbied Congress for another $1.2 billion to support Polio Plus. So we actually contributed in this way $1.8 billion. And when I spoke to Jim Lacey, who was the chairman of the foundation at the time, because I was there when they gave awards to congressmen and senators, he said the argument was that it cost the American government to immunize people in America $300 million every year. $1.2 billion not to have to immunize people here in America is saved in 4 years. He said, it's a no-brainer. They did it to save money. Now, the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times have suggested that Rotary received the Nobel Peace Prize for its Polio Plus program. So there's a lot to be proud about in Rotarians. When Ed Mullen, the president representative in Rotary International, spoke, he mentioned some things that could be done to attract young Rotarians. Extreme Rotary, for example, business networking sessions, no dues, no meal Rotary clubs. We started a new Rotary club in New York, actually, that get together for a meeting, doesn't cost anything, you discuss business, and after that, whoever wants can go to the restaurant and eat. Actually, if you listen to what I said about the first Rotary meeting, Paul Harris and Sylvester Scheel had dinner, went up, had a business meeting. Same concept. The first Rotary meeting operated exactly like that. We can go back to that, and that makes it more flexible. That's when you start a new Rotary club. You have to find a restaurant with a private dining room. You have to commit to X number of people coming. With this concept, you don't have to. Just find a room at a church free of charge. Easy to start a Rotary club. I sat down with Ed yesterday. We both agree that young people have a passion to serve, no matter how centric they are. I mean, I have a 19-year-old son, and I've learned that it doesn't really make any sense to argue with him because I'm never going to win anyway. But they do have a passion to serve, if we can hook into that passion. And we Rotarians are really in the business of passion, because we have a passion to do something. That's really how it gets us to serve. So if we can show them something that they care about passionately, we will probably get them to join Rotary. In fact, Paul Harris said, in the battle between, and I'm going to say this to finish up my speech, In the battle between the Cants and the Cans in Rotary, the Cants have never won a single permanent victory to my knowledge. The broad visions, the noble purposes have always won. And that's what I want us to keep on continuing having. Thank you very much.
Please be seated. Matt, thank you for the most informative Paul Harris story any of us have ever heard. The real Paul Harris.